And I'm joined on the phone right now by Daniel Son. He formerly hosted a program here at Free Radio Santa Cruz on Wednesday nights called Self Defense 101 with DJ Daniel Son. And at the moment, Daniel Son is in Oaxaca, Mexico, and we're joined on the phone right now by him. Hello, can you hear me? Oops, wrong phone pod. Hello, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Great, thanks so much for joining us today. Really appreciate it. What time is it there right now?
It's, what, 5, 6 o'clock here.
So a couple hours ahead of us here.
Yeah.
Not too big of a time difference.
No, the sun's just kind of starting to shrink down to the sky. Always a beautiful sky in Oaxaca, so.
So can you let us know a little bit of background? I'm sure people who listen to Free Radio Santa Cruz certainly have been hearing quite a bit about what's happening in Oaxaca, but if you could lay out a brief background to the situation there, and then we can get a report from you about the current developments.
Sounds good. Yeah, the quickest background I can give is basically that for years and years and decades, the people of Oaxaca have been struggling with extreme poverty and have been organizing and protesting for better living conditions, but especially in regards to free education, which is guaranteed to all Mexicans in the Constitution. And for years and years, the focal point has been an annual protest by teachers demanding initially, you know, things like better pay, respect for teachers, a different educational system. But since the teachers are the ones that know best what the children need in their towns, what the rural areas of Oaxaca lack, the protests over, you know, very quickly, but over the course of the years and the decades expanded to the point where the teachers are largely the focal points, the center of the main protest for a different society in Oaxaca. This year, the annual protest turned violent when the governor sent the National Guard, essentially the armed federal preventative police, in to evict the teachers, killing a few. And what initially was a four-day strike, an annual four-day protest, became what is now on going on 5 months of what could be called civil unrest, but what basically means that the politicians and police have been kicked out of Oaxaca City, and the city has been occupied and barricaded by neighbors, business owners, teachers, and anyone else who cares to participate in remaking local government, remaking schools, remaking society.
So what is the current situation? I understand that there's been a pretty significant development, that the teachers have agreed to return to work tomorrow. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, the vote happened over the last couple of days, Friday and Saturday. Teachers in their groups in the Zocalo and their occupations have been presented with a referendum about whether or not to end the strike, to go back to work, with a variety of pressures, among them the fact that they haven't been getting paid for several months, but also that the school year is to have started and they're interested in the education of the children who are currently being taught by priesta parents that are loyal to the government and the governor, ex-governor, by military officials, by police who aren't also not working, et cetera. But based on a variety of pressures, the teachers voted by actually a relatively big margin to return to work and initiate a school year tomorrow. So 26,000 voted to start class, 15 million voted against it. The strange thing about those numbers is that the official numbers is that there are 70,000 teachers in Oaxaca State. So that means that on the front page here that about 40,000 participated in this vote. So that's kind of my question for the day, but I haven't been able to talk to many teachers about that. But it looks like back to school tomorrow.
Now, this is a larger movement much larger than the teacher strike, and a lot of people have been, well, a fair number have been wounded or even killed. Can you talk about what some people have been dealing with in the process of what's been happening there?
Yeah, you're exactly right. This is a much larger movement than the teachers, and so the move by the teachers to go back to work can be seen in a lot of different lights. It's not the end of the struggle, and it's not necessarily a step back. What it basically means is that the teachers are giving up their position at the forefront. There's been talk of other unions now taking over the position of the strike, including health workers, healthcare workers, going on strike to replace the teachers and to take on some of that role and some of that sacrifice, because obviously a strike is difficult to sustain, and it's been 5 months. In terms of the repression and the deaths, the most recent was a teacher. He was a primary school bilingual teacher who taught in an indigenous village, very young children. His name was Panfilo Hernandez Vasquez, and he was 48, and he was killed at the barricades earlier this week. Each night in Huaca City, the different neighborhoods set up road blockades to protect the city. As I said, there are a few, but basically there is no official police or military presence. They were kicked out. And so to impede or slow any kind of invasion, reoccupation of the city center, people set up barricades and blocked the streets. And this teacher was one of the people out on the street guarding the neighborhood. Some off-duty military or police rode up on the barricade and just started shooting, and he was killed. He died shortly after at the hospital. That's the most recent death. The last week as well, a painter who was killed also at the barricades. In that attack, two men were shot, one in the shoulder who was injured and quite shocked as he was shot running away. He was shot, in the back of the shoulder and out. But the other man was shot in the head, and he died at the scene.
What was his name?
The painter?
Yeah, the one who was killed.
Let's see.
Hernandez was his last name, right?
I believe that was, Alejandro Garcia Hernandez.
And that was on Friday night, the 13th of October.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, and there was also someone shot when the teachers and some others took over the television station and some of the radio stations. I understand somebody was killed in that incident.
Yeah, what happened, that's a really interesting story. At a march and protest in support of the teachers, a group of women decided to go to Canal Nueve, the state-run TV station, and they decided nothing more than to ask, not a demand, to ask for an hour of airtime to give their side of the story, to tell what was happening. They were rebuffed, kicked out, and apparently treated badly. Apparently one woman was kind of handled, pushed. They met again, decided not to use force, decided again to ask, this time for half an hour. They were again rebuffed and totally kicked out by security, at which point they decided to arm themselves with pots and pans, which had been used in the march, and take over the station, which they did. They occupied the state-run TV station, and as they were doing it, the government cut the signal, sabotaged the antenna. But the building is this huge cultural compound. There's a theater. There's a couple of different radio stations in there. There's the whole salon of the television station, all the antennas. So it's a huge compound, basically. And this large group of women absolutely, completely took it over and They kept employees there, but as a little bit of time passed, they were able to counter the misinformation by initiating a web broadcast through one of the radio stations. Because as I said, the antennas had been sabotaged and the TV station had been pulled off the air. They started by initiating a web broadcast that basically stated that countered the misinformation that the employees were being harmed and harassed and that terrorists had taken over the TV station. That's the message that was going out. But gradually, with the cooperation of more and more of the techs and the workers, they initiated television broadcasts, they initiated more radio broadcasts, they initiated more web transmissions as well, to the point that the military stormed it, killing it's somewhat disputed how many deaths there were, but at least two people were killed, and the station was essentially abandoned. They kicked out the group of women that had occupied it, but haven't reinitiated broadcasts themselves. And the women have not left. They've maintained a barricade outside. So what that means basically is that this group took over the TV station and radio stations for a few days, and then the radio sabotaged them, or the government sabotaged them, and haven't restored the equipment so that that there is no state-run TV and these radio stations are still off the air.
So why is the government and the police so aggressive? Why are they reacting with such extreme violence, do you think?
Oaxaca is one of the poorest places in the hemisphere. Oaxaca is definitely the poorest state in Mexico. Has a large indigenous population. It is, by their standards, the standards of the current Mexican government, underdeveloped. And the plans that they have for Mexico and for Oaxaca specifically, and the ways that it has been run, have been brutal for a long time. There has been this degree of violence and significantly greater degrees of violence for decades. Critics have routinely been tortured and assassinated and disappeared, thrown in jail. Education, higher education has been attacked and censored at the universities. Most of the media has always been in the hands of the government and the multinational corporations. And so what's looked at as a surge of violence here, and of course every death is extremely lamentable, and now with teachers being shot down in the streets, there's a lot of attention. But the reality is that this isn't any greater, unfortunately, than the violence that the people of Oaxaca have faced any time they have dared to stand up to the powers of these corporations and these politicians. There has been, however, a movement and waves of movements throughout the years that have always fought back. The teachers' movement has been 26 years of these annual strikes. In the past, they have successfully kicked out a governor, and that's largely the focal point at this point, is the refusal of the pre-governor to step down.
That is, that's Ortiz?
Yeah, Ulises Ruiz Ortiz is a priesta, meaning he belongs to the pre-party. There was, when Fox was elected and a new party came into power in Mexico, lots of people were quite happy that there was a change in direction, and there's all this statement that the pre had lost power in Mexico. But in some states, that simply has not yet come to pass. The pre has ruled Oaxaca for 76 years without interruption. And so it's the same thing that happened in 2000 with Fox being elected has not come to pass in Oaxaca.
So does the government in Mexico or the police department even go through the emotions of claiming they're going to investigate any of these killings, or are they basically just like, do they say nothing about it? What's their official position? I realize that they're clearly not going to do anything because they're most likely responsible for these deaths and injuries. But are they saying publicly through the media that they're going to investigate these killings, or are they even being reported? Like, how is this playing out down there?
The strange thing is that there really isn't a local government to respond. The governor is in Mexico City, the ex-governor. He was on TV the other night, and the hosts of the show he was on, I guess most closely could be compared to maybe Crossfire or one of those kind of, I don't know, political shows on American TV, North American TV. He repeatedly blamed the violent protesters. All the violence is being blamed on teachers and on the indigenous movements and groups here. But the newspapers, the media here, while it is definitely difficult to have an independent media, some of the media have been very good at investigating and finding out who's behind these shootings. And they've almost without exception been police officers or military officials. In one case, it was an army soldier who was essentially AWOL, but probably given permission and instruction for his mission. He was missing from his barrack just on the other side of the border with Oaxaca. And he's the one who shot the painter, Hernandez, Alejandro Garcia Hernandez. And so the government is, won't be investigating these crimes. The crimes that they're focusing on are the occupations of public space, the crimes that the government wants to have some answer to are the occupations of businesses and hotels, the shutting down of some of Oaxaca's most exploitive tourist industries. Those are the crimes that they want people to be held responsible for, the so-called crimes. They're not particularly interested in the crimes of people being shot in the streets for defending their neighborhood.
So you say there isn't really any official governance going on in Oaxaca right now. Can you explain, I mean, you probably already went over this a little bit, but can you explain how that came to be? And then can you talk about how the people of Oaxaca, some of the alternative methods of education and democracy and governance that are going on right now there?
Yeah. After the desalojo, the eviction of the teachers from the city center, the Zocalo, the central plaza, and as the state-run TV was occupied, 12 radio stations were taken over, but also the municipal government, the local governments, not just in Oaxaca City, but all around the state, have gradually been taken over, sometimes temporarily, and then, you know, they let people return. Sometimes permanently, they're just closed. But essentially, on a daily basis, the office of whatever small agency has been taken over and occupied and closed, meaning, you know, the courts or the city hall, the local government-run clinic in every town has definitely been taken over because they're a real easy scapegoat for people who haven't had quality health care in their lives. Obviously, the schools, as the teachers have been on strike. And so almost one by one, every office of the functioning government, the state government and the local governments in Oaxaca have been closed and shut down. And so on one hand, the people who are in the streets, to a large extent, weren't getting services from those agencies anyway. So they already have had for a long time alternatives set up. People who aren't receiving health care have other methods of getting health care. But the APO, the popular assembly of the people of Oaxaca, has taken over some functioning role and declared themselves to be the legitimate power or governance for all of Oaxaca. There are clinics set up in the streets in the Zocalo. Anyone who's sick, there's tables of medicine and doctors there. Every time I've passed by, people have been receiving blood pressure screens or different exams. People are being cared for in public space in the Central Plaza in terms of healthcare. In terms of education, I've asked that question of several teachers, several young people, you know, asking kids if they miss school and what they're learning on the streets. I've asked teachers what they think their students are learning. I've asked students what they've learned in the last few months. And without exception, they've said, no, I don't particularly miss school or class, but I've learned a lot about my family and what it can do. I've learned a lot about my town, my history. I've learned about what it takes to run a barricade, what it takes to support feeding the entire neighborhood throughout the night, what it takes to basically what it takes to do a building takeover, you know. Their children, I met a kid that was in charge of one of the barricades. He was the one who was in charge of setting up and taking down the occupation of an intersection all night long, every night, in order to make sure that there wasn't an unanswered invasion by the federal government in terms of military or any other kind of intervention or reoccupation. Ulysses, the ex-governor, keeps claiming that he will return to Oaxaca and he will reoccupy the city center within a couple of days. And so there's been this continuing threat of reoccupation at the hands of the PFP, is the Federal Preventative Police, basically. Somewhat analogous to the National Guard, but not quite.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead.
Well, I just wanted to remind folks you're listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz, and you're listening online at freakradio.org. You might be listening later to a rebroadcast of this at 101.1 FM. And I'm speaking with Daniel Son. He was formerly host of the program Self-Defense 101 on Wednesday nights here at Free Radio from 9 on. And he's in Oaxaca right now, and we're speaking to him from there. So, and I wanted to mention, if people want to read some of his reports, they've been posted to indiebay.org/Americas. That's America's news. And it looks like it's actually indiebay.org/international/Americas. But at the top of the page there, it says Daniel Son reports from Oaxaca City, Mexico. You can read several of his reports. And in one of them, from October 12th, you say that the group you were talking about, APO, APPO, and the people of Oaxaca have made it perfectly clear that Governor Ortiz cannot remain in power since he has not been in power for several months now, and it says any step forward depends on his resignation, voluntary or otherwise. What I want to ask you is it likely that he's going to resign voluntarily or otherwise? And what is likely to happen? I know you can't predict the future, but just from your standpoint, what do you think is likely to happen? A continued standoff at this point? What do you think the outcome is going to be?
Well, there have been a lot of options on the table from the get-go, and a lot of different strategies. Initially, I just arrived here about 2 weeks ago. And shortly after shortly before, APO had sent a huge delegation. There was a huge march from Oaxaca City all the way to Mexico City to engage in negotiations with the Senate, with the Congress. And so the hope was for a legislative solution. And, you know, whenever there's a big a manifestation, some kind of organizing, something going on, people ask for some kind of legislative or structural solution through the powers that be as they are. And so people were waiting for the outcome of that, and that came just a few days ago. And essentially the answer from the Senate, from the politicians, from the so-called representatives was, we're not going to deal with it. Their answer, the question before them was whether the legal standard in Mexican politics, the legal standard of ungovernability, had taken place, which means they were looking for evidence that the government was so broken that something else had to be done. Their answer was that it hadn't. Their answer was that the state government is somehow still functioning, and that the system isn't broken. They didn't offer anything further for what to do about that, but it's essentially looked at as a blank check for Ulysses and the pre-party to do whatever it takes to restore their power. But here in Oaxaca City, it's most definitely broken. I don't think any wall doesn't have his face on it with some kind of slogan, some kind of mark. He has lost all semblance of authority to rule this group of people, absolutely. And I don't feel like I don't feel like I'm asserting something strange as an outsider saying that. I think it's pretty clear and pretty solid that if he were to continue as governor, that it would be a farce. He can't go anywhere in Oaxaca without being greeted with protests, without being attacked, essentially. Last time he came to Oaxaca City, there was gunfire when his security team essentially had to shoot their way out of town in order to leave without the crowd intervening somehow. It would have been an incredible sight to see had that taken place. I don't know what would have happened. His rule is effectively nil in this city and in this state, where he's known better as Rata, as the rat, than anything else. Every wall demands his exit. They go so far as some of the slogans and signs say that we want you in Oaxaca, Ulysses, but 6 feet underground. He is the basically there's a long, long list of grievances, and people have been demanding his ouster since he assumed office.
Does it seem he's going to? It sounds like he's refusing to resign despite all of this. What is likely to happen in light of that?
He as an individual is definitely refusing this. He's not going to voluntarily leave office, but the political pressure may do so. It's a possibility, and basically it depends on a lot of other things. It's interesting timing right now in Mexico with everything else that's going on. There's a transition in the presidency and another contested election. And so essentially the PAN party, the ruling national party, the party of Vicente Fox, is doing all it can to install its favored successor, Calderón, into the presidency on December 1st. And maintain some kind of legitimacy in an election that's largely considered to have been stolen. And the PRD, the somewhat lefter party that barely maybe won/lost, was in this questionable election, is trying to figure out its strategy in the face of that. So those two parties kind of have other things on their minds. The PRI absolutely 100% supports Ulysses and maintains their place as the ruling party in Oaxaca. And so what happens between those three parties in order to pressure Ulysses to resign to save some kind of face is really up in the air. The PAN party has, just in the last few days, shown signs of some members have begun to say that they are actively pressuring him to resign so that the question is resolved before Calderón takes power, before the PAN takes the presidency. strategically, it seems to me, again, I've only been here for 2 weeks, and I'm, a gringo from Santa Cruz. But it seems to me that the strategy that would work best would be to cut him off, you know, to cut their losses, to let him be the scapegoat, let him take the fall, and maintain some semblance of authority, because that's been such a central demand that it's almost like they could give that step, give that concession, and maintain something. I feel like if they continue to fight for this fallen governor, then the conflict's going to escalate, the protests are going to escalate to the point where it could go from the ideal solution of, you know, APO becomes the ruling party, Oaxaca becomes the sovereign state, and the people of Oaxaca win the right to do what they damn well please with their natural resources, with their schools, within their own largely indigenous communities. And on the other hand, on the other side, a reoccupation by the army and a brutal, brutal bloodbath to stop people from coming out into the streets every night to reoccupy public space.
So you're saying the PRI should give up this notion of Ortiz being governor. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, it's such a central demand that I that's not necessarily what I want to happen, but it seems like strategically the PRI could cut Ulysses loose and let him take the fall for all the wrongs that have been perpetuated against the people of Oaxaca.
And that's not ideal, because he's not the only one responsible for all these things. Is that why you're saying that's not ideal?
Yeah, because I feel like they could do that and then try to reinstall someone else.
I see.
Slightly lesser, but still without absolutely completely tearing away the system as it is.
So it could
which
just,
is what people are demanding.
It could just be a front for continuing things as they are, but just giving up having Ortiz there.
Exactly.
I see. So do you think, but how likely is that? I mean, is it likely that the PRI or Ulysses Ortiz is going to, cave in on that? Or are they going to stick to it? I mean, it doesn't seem like either side is budging on that. So do you think that's likely to occur, that they would just cut him loose as governor and make that compromise? Do you think that's likely to occur?
I'm not sure. I don't think so.
So then what is likely to occur? An escalation, a continued bloodbath, basically?
That's definitely an option that's still on the table. That's obviously not that's not what anyone favors.
So what are some of the other possibilities?
The continued negotiations could perhaps bring something about. A lot of people don't have confidence in those either, it's a long way away from Oaxaca. But it seems like this dialogue is just going to, is definitely going to continue. It seems like the greater involvement of a greater number of people in Oaxaca is going to continue to take place. There's basically no going back, and what people are looking for, some kind of solution or some kind of resolution, may already be taking place, in that people are already becoming more engaged and more empowered in terms of media, in terms of education, in terms of use of resources and business. It's almost like the question is the answer, in that what people want is for a different Oaxaca with more people involved in the process.
So this,
and in decision making, and that's exactly what's happening in the course of this.
Mm.
It's just a huge fear that that's all going to be taken away. That's all going to be shut down.
That's a very legitimate fear, considering that the governor, who you say has no, and who folks down there are saying has to go, is refusing to and actually threatening to come in full force. Correct? Within the next couple of days, are you at all? Does this? I'm curious if you're at all afraid for your own safety and those around. I mean, obviously you're concerned for people around you. People have been dying there and being seriously injured. If they come in with even more force and try to basically totally reoccupy, which sounds like that's what's being threatened, what are some of your feelings about that potential that could be happening in the next day or two?
I think that people are definitely going to wait and see how tomorrow goes at school. I think that's the next step to see. I don't think it's going to happen as the teachers return to school. I don't think it's going to happen the same day. I think a lot of people are going to be watching that. And it's a threat that's been constant. It's always been within the next few days this is going to happen. There's just been this constant round of threats and this constant stream of of leaked negotiation deals and possibilities, and so there's a lot. There's definitely a lot of uncertainty in terms of if that actually came to pass. There are a large number of tourists here, even with what's been going on, that would definitely immediately flee. There's an already under attack press that could be probably fairly easily controlled, or at least shut down the voices that are dissenting. And a lot of people definitely are afraid of that. They don't talk about it much. It's hard to get people to talk about the things they fear, and they don't want to say the things that may come to pass. There's definitely some fear for personal safety and for the people around, and the people who absolutely would not back down, would continue to operate these barricades, for example, every night.
Are you at all afraid for your own safety? Have you been going to the barricades? Have you been out in the streets participating in this stuff, in these protests and barricades? And if so, are you at all concerned for your own safety?
I have gone out to the barricades somewhat regularly. I haven't necessarily participated in the marches as a marcher as much as documenting what I've seen. But as an independent reporter, I don't exactly have a press pass and a big van and any kind of semblance of protection in that sense. There is a risk involved, certainly, and you know, being at the barricades at any moment, the idea is that people are prepared, for some kind of invasion or for some kind of shooting, as people have been.
Because of these attacks by the military and the off-duty police that are very random, I would imagine, because mm-hmm. they're trying to, they wouldn't tell people, we're coming, it's a random attack, could happen any time.
Yeah, exactly. And so it's something that I have given a lot of thought to and considered, whether or what it would take for me to leave. And mostly I feel like this is has the potential to do something so completely, totally opposite of the usual and of the bloodshed that we all fear. This situation has the potential to be something so completely different from that.
Why do you feel that? Because, I mean, from people that are listening, even to alternative media here, I think that there is a strong fear that at some point the government's just going to get fed up of what they probably see as a real challenge to their authority and bring down the iron fist. So what gives you the hope or the feeling that things could or may very likely go a very different route?
Again, the timing, being in this period of time and with so much going on in the rest of Mexico, it's not an isolated thing happening in the south as it was in the mid-90s in Chiapas, where the government could say that there's this little indigenous rebellion that we're just going to put down. There is so much happening with the federal election that just took place. And all the organizing that has gone into questioning that, the PRD, leftish party that supposedly lost that election, most likely won it, has called for its supporters that were initially occupying Mexico City to come to Oaxaca and act as human shields. The EZLN and the Zapatista group has been touring throughout Mexico, state to state, for the past several months, initiating dialogues with students and union workers and leftists and families and workers throughout the country. And I feel like with so much happening in Mexico right now, it can't be an isolated incident. It's also interconnected that what happens in Oaxaca can't happen nationwide. And so bringing down full force, I think, would get such a response throughout the nation that I think that their hold on power is so so tenuous at best nationally, that there's, again, such a potential for the entire Mexican state and entire Mexican people to create change in this country that that it can't be just this little thing happening down in the southernmost, poorest, and most indigenous state. It's all interconnected, and it's all a nationwide struggle.
It's part of a bigger picture where folks all around the country are pushing things in a similar direction, is what you're saying?
Exactly. I feel like if they brought down the Iron Fist and reoccupied violently Oaxaca City, that the response in Mexico City, the response in Chiapas, the response along the border, the response in Monterrey, the response nationwide would be too big to shut down.
And again, how would you describe that movement that's happening not only in Oaxaca but around the country, if you could attempt to define it somehow or describe it in a brief sense?
Yeah, it's really interesting. It's some of it's electoral, obviously, with the federal election and the PRD and parties and candidates. And some of it's explicitly not. The Zapatista campaign is called La Otra Campaña, the other campaign, and it's explicitly non-electoral. They launched the campaign, La Otra Campaña, at the same time that the candidates were going for the national presidency with their campaigns. But they were going from town to town, encouraging people to organize completely separate from any kind of party or election. And in fact, encouraging people to be totally dismissive of the electoral process, as the election was going to be stolen anyway, which it was. So some of it's an electoral movement, and some of it's explicitly not. Socialism isn't a bad word in Mexico like it is in the States. And so there's a lot of socialist and workers movements that are going on and more active and more vocal these days. There's a lot of hammers and sickles around, which is something I'm not particularly used to in the States. But there's also a lot of Circle A's. And so the tension between and the potential for, you know, links between socialist organizations and anarchist organizations is really interesting to see. Again, something that's historically quite tenuous, but something you don't see in the U.S. very often. Some of the organizing, some of the campaigning and the sentiment is just, centered around a job, being a teacher. And basically, a lot of people are just disillusioned with the big change that finally happened with the transfer of power in 2000. But people are just tired of the same old system and the impunity with which it operates. One of my favorite stencils out here on the streets hijacks a slogan of the PRI in Oaxaca that says "Con unidad," with unity. But every time that logo appears anywhere, it's been altered to say "Con impunidad," with impunity, rather than unity. And people who didn't question the validity of the government are doing so now. People who thought that maybe the president was a sellout, or their representative was a punk, or their the local mayor was bought off or something like that, but didn't question the validity of the entire system are doing so. And this has happened before. The people of Oaxaca have removed their governor before. There have been huge student movements in Mexico that have come in waves. It's like 60s nostalgia of sorts, but it happens every generation, and the time is now in Mexico right now for this generation. It remains to be seen what can be done and whether those links that so many people desperately are trying to make between somewhat disparate groups that have always been divided and conquered, between indigenous groups and student groups, between workers groups and housewives, between media activists and you know, maybe center-left politicians. If all of these links can be made, then perhaps this is the generation that can actually make the change that Mexico has been looking for so long.
Well, I want to thank you so much for taking the time to be on the air today and talk about what's happening in Oaxaca. I certainly hope to hear a lot from you and others, if there's other folks down there that can be on our airwaves. We want to have as much of that as possible here. So very interested in what's happening there and the developments, and very concerned, I think, a lot of folks here in Santa Cruz about that. So appreciate your time today and do expect to hear more from you in the coming days, and might even have you back next Sunday. I'm sure just there's so much happening every day there that I'm sure we could have you on every day. So
well, for more information and for more updates, I'll continue to post to the Americas page at Indie Bay. It's the challenge is that it's not local news what I'm seeing and reporting on recording. I'm recording interviews and talking to people and taking a lot of pictures and sending a lot of information. It's obviously not local news through Santa Cruz, but there are a lot of Oaxacans in Santa Cruz. There are a lot of people working in restaurants and in fields that are Oaxacan.
Yeah.
And people have messages for the people of Oaxaca that have crossed the border. They want to encourage continued support and solidarity. And so I'll definitely continue to post that information as best I can. There are downloadable MP3s. There are lots of photos and what I've written.
Yeah, so audio.
Page. Yeah.
There's audio as well as photos and Daniel Son's writings. That's at indiebay.org/international/Americas. You can just put indiebay/Americas into Google and bring up the page there. So any final comments today before we end?
This is a really beautiful place. And when those spaces, it's incredible to see the occupation of public space. That's, you know, with the Zocalo being occupied, the streets day and night are filled with people who are demanding their right to be in the public streets. And I don't think that's going to change with the teachers going back to work tomorrow. I think that that is a move that may, in fact, widen the movement and open it up to other leadership and other voices rather than thinking of it as a step backward. And so I'm hoping that that's what's going to happen. And I've talked to people who have said the same. And in the next few days, it's going to be interesting to see what Apo and what Oaxaca City looks like without the constant presence and the constant, not necessarily position of leadership, but the symbolic presence of teachers in this struggle on a day-to-day basis. I think that's going to continue to a large extent, as they have stated that they're going to continue their demands for the resignation, but they want to start school. I think that it'll be interesting within the next few days to see, to a certain extent, who else steps up, what other unions decide that they're going to go on strike now that the teachers are back at work, what other groups decide that they are going to step up their participation in order to pick up where the teachers left off.
Thank you so much for joining me today, Daniel. Really appreciate it. I want to mention that probably tomorrow, my guess, although I can't say for certain, but we do have a program here on Mondays from 3 to 5 called the Indie Newswire program. And I'm sure that this will be among the information that's presented tomorrow, probably some stuff from indie media from Daniel, I'm sure will be a part of that show. As there is, as I already mentioned, quite a bit of audio and available at indiebay.org/international/Americas. So I'm sure folks tune in Mondays from 3 to 5. They'll be hearing from Oaxaca and hearing from Daniel Son as part of that. Thanks so much again for joining me, Daniel. Really appreciate it.
Thank you very much. And I'll just mention that most of that audio is either transcribed into English on the webpage or translated in the file into English in the audio. So both English and Spanish are present in all of the posts.
Great. Thanks so much for making this accessible to folks here and around the world through that, and for your work there. And just we'll be talking with you frequently, I'm sure, here at Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Thank you very much. We'll talk to you soon.
Take care.
You too.
Bye.
And again, that was Daniel Son. He was formerly a DJ here at Free Radio Santa Cruz, the host of the program Self-Defense 101 with DJ Daniel Son, which aired Wednesday nights from 9 to midnight. And he was speaking with us from Oaxaca, where he's been for the last couple of weeks. The website, again, that you can go to read his reports, listen to audio that, again, he said is available in both English and Spanish. If it's in Spanish, it sounds like there's some transcription into English, as well as his writings, his photographs. You can see this at indiebay.org/international/Americas. And keep tuning in to Free Radio Santa Cruz. You're going to be hearing quite a bit about what's happening in Oaxaca on these airwaves, as you already have. And you're listening to a program called Peace Talks right now. My name is George. I'm the host of the show. Thanks for listening.